Oh, well, it's a delight to be here today on this 20th anniversary year when we're starting out, as we did 20 years ago, talking about the basic principles of science of mind as we start out the year. And my assigned topic for this week was what science of mind says about God. And I have about 45 or 50 books on the shelf that describe what science of mind says about God. And that was a little daunting, but I found a way to organize it. So I am going to tell my own story about what science of mind said to me about God over the last 35 years or so. And I will tell you that when I walked into my first Science of Mind church in 1987, I think, Reverend Marianne said, "No one can tell you what is true for you except you." And Ernest Holmes expected that his philosophy would remain open at the top. And so the very first step of spiritual mind treatment, the form of affirmative prayer we teach, says, "What is God?" and asks you to focus on what you believe about God. And so that was a revelation to me, because up until that time, I had a whole lot of people tell me what I should believe about God, but having somebody actually say, "You get to choose what you believe," was a revelation. And in the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest Holmes says, "Jesus, in a few simple words, laid down the law of life. It is done unto you as you believe." And that describes law of attraction, which is also described as change your thinking, change your life. It's described as that which is like it to itself is drawn. And Abraham Hicks says, we get what we think about whether we want it or not. And that's very logical and clear to me as a description of the law. And before that, before I had the science mind idea about God as law in action in the world, I had gone through a more traditional religious background. I remember crying myself to sleep when I was 11 years old because my dad was going to go to hell because he didn't go to church on Sunday morning. And I was relatively traumatized by the seeming violence of God and the vindictiveness of God that I was taught about as a child. And I pulled out the map of human consciousness, which you guys know I've showed you every time I've spoken for the last 18 years, I think. And at where I was at one time, where God was frightening and punitive, was at fear 100 on the map of human consciousness, at a very, very low place. And then over time, when I was 15, I rejected that tradition entirely, although I still had to go to church every Sunday because my mother insisted, until I went away to college and I became an atheist or an agnostic for the next 20 years or so. I couldn't find anything in religion that spoke to me in a way that felt promising or good. So as a young woman, I was an atheist, and my consciousness on the map of human consciousness came in at 175, which is still below the 200 level of moving from a catabolic to an anabolic state of a metabolism where your body is basically destroying itself in small increments, that you are not supporting life in the way that you could if your consciousness would change. And the dividing line is courage at 200. And I've told this story many times of making the decision when I was 35 that I would rather die than continue to live in fear in the relationship I was in, and left in spite of having death threats if I would leave. And fortunately, nothing happened. Everything unfolded relatively easy from there on. And shortly after that, within just a couple of months, a friend I met at a divorce support group took me to a study group in a community center studying Louise Hay, who I later found out was a Science of Mind practitioner before she became an independent interfaith minister. And what Louise Hay teaches is law of attraction and the Science of Mind philosophy. So for a couple of years, I learned Science of Mind at a distance because Louise Hay was in a study group. It was in a community center. It wasn't a church. Nobody was telling me what to think. They were just exposing me to positive ideas. And 2 years into it, someone at that community center who later became a leading light in the Science of Mind community when she became a minister and has been a high leader in Science of Mind, Michelle Medrano. She wasn't even a practitioner at this point in Denver. And she said to me, if you like what you're learning here, there is a church that teaches it, the Mile High Church of Religious Science. It's the, at that point, was the biggest church of religious science in the United States. And she said, you might want to go there and check it out, see if it works for you. So the next Sunday I went there, and the minister, Dr. Fred Vogt, was talking about teaching a Science of Mind 1 class. And he said, this evening I'm going to do a lecture on Science of Mind and the class and why you ought to take it. And my husband at the time, Cliff Fisher, and I went to back. We drove more than an hour to go back that evening to listen to Dr. Fred talk about the class. And I made the decision to take the class. I needed that training. I wanted that training. And so I went back to my study group the following Sunday, and a different friend, Linda Frazee, who later moved to Northern Virginia, she told me that if I was going to take that class, I might want to take it with Reverend Marianne, who was teaching at Cherry Creek Church, which was 10 minutes from my home, instead of over an hour, which would have been well over an hour and a half at rush hour for Wednesday night classes. And there would be 20 people in my class instead of 200. So I thought that sounds like a good idea. And I went to Marianne's church and I was home. I felt warm and cozy and happy and was surrounded by great music. They had a wonderful music director that sang songs that inspired me. And Reverend Marianne was an actress in LA before she went to ministerial school and was a great speaker. And it was just a joy to be there. And I signed up for the class immediately. And 3 weeks into the class, Reverend Marianne came to me. You've heard this story before. It always makes me cry. She came to me with a Science of Mind textbook in her hands. And she said, you're a mystic and you don't know it, but this chapter in the textbook will teach you some of the things you need to learn to live your life from an expanded perspective. Reverend Marianne changed my life that day. Science of Mind was changing my thinking. And when I encountered Science of Mind, I thought about God as law in action, the law of attraction. And that appealed to my reason. It appealed to my understanding. And all of a sudden, on the map of human consciousness, I moved up from 200, which was courage, to 400, which was reason. And I was really excited, and I could identify with this God that was understandable. It was such a gift. I was thrilled to have a God that was understandable. And that took me to studying spiritual mind treatment, beginning to practice this idea of every time you do a prayer, you say, I realize this is what God is. I recognize, recognition is the first step. I recognize God is love and light and peace and grace and power and energy. I know what God is. And the second step is I am that. And so it begins to build the consciousness of oneness, but I was still focused on the consciousness of law. That there was a law and I could use it, and it was powerful and it was reasonable and God was understandable. And that made my heart so happy. It was incredibly healing to me. But then I began to expand in my possibility with the idea that Ernest Holmes in the Science of Mind textbook says, love rules through law. Love rules through law. Okay, now we have law and we have love. God is love. God is love. And finding that energy, the God is love energy, was very powerful for me. And living the Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes says, believing that God is all the presence there is, I am learning to feel this presence in everything and everyone. Dwelling on the thought that God is love, I permit my mind to come filled with the consciousness of love. I permit this love to envelop everything and everyone, bringing with it a sense of peace and joy and certainty. He went on, and it's beautiful, but I'm trying to be quicker. So I won't read you that whole one, because I want you to read this to you. Because there was a minister in Baltimore, a Science of Mind minister in Baltimore named Jeffrey Proctor, who just blew me away. I met him at the Big Sky Retreat in Wyoming, and he was beautiful. He made his transition into non-physical a few years later, but I want to bring him alive today in this prayer that he wrote, because it's so beautiful. He wrote, there is only one life, and that life is spirit. Spirit's essence is love. Love without end, without condition, without reason, just love. And I am created out of this one pure essence. My nature is love, and because this is my inherent nature, love is always with me, always with me. I let this love loosen my life in ways that bless all beings everywhere. I let this love flow without limit. I let it speak through my words and take form in my every act. I open my heart and my mind and all of my being to let this love be the powerful guiding and healing force in my life. This love, being my nature, feels completely right, and in it, I am always at home. I love the people it's easy to love, and I love those it is more difficult to love. Where I find loving a challenge, I let spirit love through me and show me how to love more deeply and more truly. Anything unlike love, I now release completely, and in its place, the creative and nurturing power of love remains. I give thanks for the power to choose love above all else. And I give thanks for this wonderful universe of which I am a part. I am ever grateful for the love that is my source, my substance, and my true heart. And so it is. I love Jeffrey Proctor. Wherever you are in non-physical, Jeffrey, you are still a gift. And as I began to live this spiritual philosophy of God as love, I raised my place on the map of human consciousness. Not every moment of every day. Certainly, I have my moments where I lose it. But I started practicing love at a higher level, which is the 500s. So I've gone from 100 to 200 to 400 to 500. I'm making progress and notice that science of mind is keeping up, or I'm keeping up with science of mind. It's such a rich philosophy that it speaks to us at all these different levels of consciousness that is so powerful. It's just amazing. And so then I moved into the space where God was love and God was a friend. And in the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest Holmes talks about divine companionship. And he says, I have an inner friend who walks and talks with me daily. He is not afar off, but is within me a constant companion. I shall never become lonely, for my friend is always near. I have but to speak, and he answers. Before my lips ever spoke, he told me of his love. Oh, my kind friend, how dear to me is thy presence. The spirit within me is my friend. Thank you, Ernest. And Dr. Margaret Stortz in Science of Mind magazine in July of 2000 said, there is no personal characteristic more important than the ability to turn to the inner presence and expect a response. Turn to the inner presence and expect a response. So I was still working on what Reverend Marianne had told me 20, 30 years before. And I started talking to God, and I wrote 4 books called Chatting with the Beloved. And that was an amazing experience to me because I was moving more and more fully into the higher levels. At least part of the time, I was feeling the oneness. I was feeling the joy. I was feeling God's presence. Every day, I was sitting and writing with that divine nature every day. And this is one of the things I wrote in 2010. It's called Play Dates with God. I said, I was reminded of one of my visions yesterday talking to a friend. I was talking to the beloved at this point. I was exploring the void, a place where my thoughts manifested instantly. When I realized each of my thoughts were showing up immediately, I had a fear thought and a monster appeared. For a moment, I was frightened, but then it occurred to me to send him love. When I did, he just blinked and wandered off. After the monster wandered off, I said to myself, I wonder what God looks like in this space. Yeah. And I heard back the most eager 9-year-old boy voice saying, what do you want me to be? Like it's all a delicious, wonderful game. And beloved said, that's exactly what this is, Connie, a delicious, wonderful game that we're eager to play with you endlessly. What do you want us to be? I said, I want you to be kind, loving thoughts in my mind. I want you to be me, being peaceful, eager, and excited about life. I want you to be me, being inspired, happy, goofy, and friendly. I want you to be me, loving myself in moments of temporary disconnection. I said, wow, B, I've asked you to be a lot of external things in my life, but I think this is the first time I've asked you to be me in a specific way. And B said, we love your invitation to come in and play. We also love your invitations to come out and play with you. And I said, play dates with God, oh my. And they said, it's all God, see. You can't escape God. The monsters, the beauty, the joy, and the terror is all God in action, responding to your thoughts. You're inviting us to play within you, brings out our love more powerfully into the mix. You become one center of activity for the infusion of infinite love directly into the consciousness of humanity. Wow. Wow. The 1000 level on the map of human consciousness, the God view is self. Jesus saying, I am that I am. And I'm not claiming to be enlightened. I have my moments, that's for sure. But I also have moments of transcendence where I feel the love. I feel the light. I feel the power. I feel the energy. And I am transported. And I am blessed with the opportunity to radiate love as they described. I can become a center of activity for the infusion of love directly into the consciousness of humanity. And when we love, when we all love, we become a center activity that infuses love into the consciousness of humanity. That's what we're here to do. It is a grace, it is a power, it is a blessing. And I am just so grateful to share this energy with you today to show you from my perspective how Science of Mind has followed me all the way through and continue to support me and uplift me and give me a wider perspective so that I could see more powerfully and love more deeply and give more fully of this energy that comes through this philosophy so exquisitely. I just cannot give thanks enough for Science of Mind's impact on my life, for this study group that has nurtured me in speaking this word for 20 years and for the 15 years before that I studied it and shared it at other churches and other places. Life is good. And this philosophy has changed my life so radically, changing my thinking about God, changed my whole life. And I love it. I love every moment of it. And I am just so incredibly grateful for the opportunity to talk to you all about it, because it's the highest truth I know. You know, Marianne said, no one can tell you what's true for you except you. So I'm not telling you what's true for you, but I'm telling you as fully and completely as possible today what's true for me. And I am so grateful to you for giving me this opportunity. Thank you all.
Really powerful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Connie.
Thank you.
Lots of notes, and half of them say, listen to this again.
Thanks, Felicia. I told other people they could talk and that I was going to talk shorter. And of course I didn't, and I apologize. But we have four people who've signed up to share with you during the second half. So I will call on Kaylee, Judy, Carolyn, and David first, David Gordon. And then whatever time we have left, we will move along. Thank you, Carolyn. So we're going to start out. And what I asked is that people volunteer to talk about how the science of the mind philosophy changed their thinking about God and how that changed their lives. So we're going to start out with Kaylee because she was the first to volunteer very eagerly. And there she is. We can get to see her face. Yay.
All right.
All righty. So I was joking with Connie. I was like, no one's going to want to hear me talk about it because I talk about it like every time I give a talk. But guess what? You guys are going to have to deal with it again. Sorry. But, you know, so I, like Connie's experience, was raised in a very conservative, religious, traditionally religious home. And I think, you know, now that I'm older, the ripe old age of 29, I have found more peace with the fact that genuinely my family believed they were doing the right thing. Like they truly and completely believed in what they were telling me and that it was the best thing for a child and a young adult. But I was raised, so my mom was raised a Jehovah's Witness, which my grandma got into after her diagnosis of cancer, when she was in her 30s, and, she raised her kids that way. And my mom was never a formal Jehovah's Witness, but if you're familiar with the belief system, it very much is ingrained in you. And so, it was ingrained in her, my mother, even though she never really was a formal member of the church. She definitely taught me the tenets of Jehovah's Witness beliefs. And like Connie, I have many a memory of fear. And the earliest real fear I could think of, I was 4 years old, and I had a little children's Bible. And I got mad for some reason. Four-year-olds throw temper tantrums. And I threw it. And my immediate thought was, oh my God, I have just pissed off God, and who I was taught was Jehovah, right? So I was like, I have pissed off Jehovah and I am going to hell. I was four, right? And I was horrified. And I remember sobbing and shaking beside myself, going to my mom in the kitchen. And I said, you know, mommy, I'm going to hell. I threw the Bible. And she got on her knees with me and prayed. And she said, and she was like, she was amused. Now that I look back on it, she was like trying not to be amused. Because obviously, you know, the four-year-old's not going to hell because she threw the children's Bible. But she wanted to comfort me. And so it was to get down on our knees and pray to Jehovah and Jesus that I be forgiven. And so that was my first real memory of religion that was ingrained in me. And then as I got older, I was sent to a variety of reasons, my anxiety, family stuff. I went to four or five middle schools. They were all religious. And in where I grew up, right outside of Charlottesville, Virginia, if you're familiar with the area, Charlottesville is very liberal, but the areas around it are extremely conservative. And it was traditionally very Southern Baptist, which is similarly to Jehovah's Witness, in my opinion, a bit of an extreme conservative belief system. Again, to each their own, if it brings you joy, if it brings you comfort, I'm so glad for that. But it was very, very, very hard for me. And I grew up with so much fear and so much anger. and God was a completely separate entity. There's a song I like by a comedian who's my age, and he calls God a vaguely muscular man with a beard and a sword. And that was God for me, who was in the sky and always had a scowl and was angry. Jesus less so, but even Jesus bowed to God, right? Who was this angry figure. And and so I was very angry and scared for so much of my life. And when I was 14, I was introduced to The Secret by Rhonda Byrne, which is, I like to call it the primer course for the Law of Attraction. And I loved it. I thought it was fascinating. It was this concept that we actually had some control over our lives rather than being in what I've called before, kind of like this tumultuous sea of God's whims, whatever. You know, it was always what God's will is, it'll happen. You know, don't even worry about it, Kaylee. Don't even think about it. God's will happen. So this concept that like you could actually create your experience, but to me, it was still separate, right? And then it wasn't until, and then I discovered Abraham in college. And that was, well, actually earlier, I was 15 when I discovered Abraham, and I had to hide the books because it's channeling, right? And so my grandma and my mom, I think they found it once and they were like, what the hell are you reading? And like, it was a big whole hullabaloo. And so anyway, long story short, I went through a mental health crisis in 2017. And I was like, I can't keep this concept. And particularly it was about God and religion. And I was like, I don't understand why I'm again on my knees crying and begging to forgive for forgiveness. I don't understand. This is not how one should live. And I discovered Dr. Joseph Murphy. And that was my introduction to science of mind. And he was specifically a divine science minister. And finished my transformation for my life. And I was introduced to this concept of God being love and harmony and everything good. And anything else is a human fabrication. So the judgment and the fear and the anger, that's all human. That is not God at its core. And I was introduced to the concept of God not having a gender and like just being everything. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's not easy. My mom genuinely still thinks I'm probably going to go to hell. My grandma doesn't know the extent of my beliefs because she would throw a fit, and she thinks the rapture is coming and I'll be stuck here on earth. And so there's elements that are hard still, but the belief that God is the introduction to God that has nothing but open arms and love and would just cradle me and hold me and adore me endlessly and without conditions, unconditionally. That was a salve for my soul and my heart. And that is how, and of course it's transformed my life with Neville Goddard and the Law of Assumption and creating my life, but at the core, not having to, and I still work with it, you know, the fear of the hell and the concept of damnation and stuff. Cause when it's ingrained in you for those formative years, it can be tricky, but God, what a change and what a transformation and what a new way, a fresh way, a dawn. I sort of see it, you know, painting the sky pink and gold and birds fluttering and chirping like a fresh spring morning. God, what a new dawn of a life and a way to look at life and God and creation. What a new fresh way. And it, like I said, it was like a balm for my angry, irritated soul. And that's what I'm grateful for. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Kaylee. That was really powerful. I appreciate your willingness to share with us. And so we'll go next to Judy, who was the next most enthusiastic volunteer.
I've never really talked about this before, so I was looking forward to opening up a bit about this. I grew up in a family in New England, and theoretically we were what was called Congregationalist or now United Church of Christ. And we never went to Sunday school until later on I asked to go to Sunday school. And later I became confirmed. The saving grace in my life was that my grandmother on my mother's side had a real interest in theosophy and in Nostradamus. And so I read a lot of books whenever I go over to their house. And as a teenager, I had some mystical experiences, including a near-death experience. And I realized that spiritual growth is a lot more thrilling than going to church. I went through a couple phases of religion. I became a born-again Christian for maybe about a year or so. And that really didn't work for me. And I was Buddhist for a while, which I really enjoyed and I still appreciate. And then later on, I got married and had my son, and I wanted to bring him up in a spiritual tradition. So I went to a Congregationalist church in the area here in Maryland, and I found it was really boring. And I thought, that's not developing a spiritual life. So I remembered I'd met some friends, Ed Preston and his wife, Diane. I'd met them in a John Gray workshop. And they said, we go to a great church. It's a Science of Mind church. And that's where I went. So that was about 30 years ago. And eventually I became a religious scientist. I started going to church on a regular basis and taking classes. And my life started to change dramatically. And, I was at one point I was living, my husband and I bought a farm very near to where Kaylee grew up. So I know whereof she speaks. And I realized that wasn't working for me. And I left my marriage and my life just kept changing and changing. And I learned the value of visualizing what it is I want, which is to me a treatment, a mental treatment. And then, and now what I'm learning to do is to receive, to feel like, hey, anything I want can be mine, which is a great thing. So this has been, like I say, about 30 years since I was introduced, and I feel blessed. Back to you, Connie.
Thanks so much, Judy. I love hearing everybody's story. This is fun. Carolyn, you're next.
Okay. My understanding of God, I guess, as a child and you kneel down to do your prayers at night, and it was, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep, if I should die before I wake, and I pray the Lord my soul to take. And I'm thinking, oh God, I could die in the middle of the night. I mean, as a 3-4-year-old child, that was, oh my. And then you hear about hell. And then, so I didn't like any of that. I didn't, that was just scary. You know, that whole thing, it created uncertainty for me. And knowing that we went to an Episcopal church, and the Episcopal churches that our family participated with, you know, it was saying things by rote. And I wouldn't say it was a really good match, but that was what you did. That was the program. I did have a conversation one night at dinner. You know, people sit around the table and talk. And my older sister, I remembered, she said, well, she thought God was in everything. And that got my mind to thinking, how could she have that thought? I was probably 8 years old. And I thought, well, where did that come from? So this question about what is God, And then having some recall experiences when I was in high school from past lives and thinking, well, where does that fit in? So I had a lot of questions. And in 1968, my father made his transition. And I was in college, and he actually came and we had a nice discussion during that time. And so we had not spoken to each other for about 2 years, and it was a healing moment. But what I had to do was realize that when somebody left their physical body, it didn't mean you didn't have any contact with them. And so it pushed me to open up even more. And then I was blessed to move to Southern California in 1971. And that just opened me up to, well, the hippie movement was happening, you know. And so we were much more open to ideas, especially in Southern California. And I had a housemate that every night we would sit with the Ouija board. And we did have a house that spirits were in. And things would happen. You'd come home and the water spigots would all be turned on, or the heater would be turned. I mean, it was interesting. And I felt really protected in that house, and just opening myself up to what is all of this. And so I studied a lot of New Age philosophy, well, whatever you could find. There wasn't a whole lot out there. And then I moved into a house, bought a house, and catty corner across the street was a Church of Religious Science. And I thought it was really interesting that when I noticed that there was a church there, I said, well, I'm going to go to that church. Didn't know anything about it. And so when I went on Christmas Eve and walked in, and I took one look at the minister and I said, oh, he's gay. And I said, well, that's really interesting, because that just didn't seem to fit within the framework that I had. But it was so open and it was so interesting to be in that environment. And so from there, feeling at home because the ideas and things that I had studied were generally accepted. I was all of a sudden in a community where people were of like mind. And I didn't have to keep my thoughts to myself so much. I could open up and talk to other people about experiences that I had and what I thought. And that was really important. And I think one of the most significant things about religious science is treatment. And having the experience of somebody doing treatment with and for me, and having an immediate turnaround in an external situation, just blew my mind. And really learning and putting into practice the things that I had encountered before I found are connected with religious science, and certainly afterwards. And so I started in religious science back in the 70s, and it's been a long journey. One of my aunts was very committed to getting me back into the Episcopal Church, and I tried to explain to her that I had graduated. I had moved on, which didn't make sense to her, but in many ways, that's how I felt. And I appreciate so many of the people that have a basis in religious science and understand more about how the universe works and how we're all energy, and the energy of God is within us. That love that we were trained to believe came from outside of us is within us all the time. And treatment is certainly a part of my daily life. And so been there a long time, and I'm just so thankful to how the desires of the heart to keep exploring and expanding and understanding show up as the next teacher, show up as a mentor, show up as look at this and see how this fits in, that it's all, the universe is always responding. So I'm really thankful. I'm thankful to, especially for a spiritual community, because it's really nice to have a tribe, be part of a tribe. So thanks, Connie.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. That was great. It's so nice to hear everybody's story. And you have a long history. That's awesome. Okay, David Gordon signed up. He wanted to speak. David?
Hiya. I'll try to be as brief as possible. When I learned about Science of Mind 21, 22 years ago, the message was, change your thinking, change your life. And it was as simple as that. And I grabbed onto that. And from there, I learned about treatment and from you and from Duke also. But from you, it was very convenient. After a bunch of years, I used it. And my first real lesson was, well, it first was from Duke, actually, in something that it just shifted my thinking about it, and everything changed. When the DVD was lost, and you helped, I found the power of how quickly things could change just by thinking and seeing a demonstration of that. So I learned then exactly what it was. So the magic is just to really, no more complicated than change your thinking, and everything around that changes. So that was the power of science, and is the power of Science of Mind. And then Abraham came along and enhanced that. And I learned about law of attraction and how your thinking is really the basis for all change. So anyway, that's, I want to keep it brief. So that was my epiphany, that Science of Mind and Abraham brought me, mostly Science of Mind. So thank you for your part in that. It's huge, huge part. And for introducing me to Science of Mind in this life. It's been quite a lesson, and I thank you for it. And so I can pass on.
You're welcome, David. And thank you for all that you do to keep our community going on the website and the email list and all of that. I really appreciate what you do.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege.
Thank you. And so we are still recording, and I would be happy for anyone else who would like to share on the recording to volunteer right now.
Connie, I'll say a couple of words, if that's okay.
That's great.
When you were talking, it brought to mind, you know, the musical Godspell and their song, to see thee more clearly, to love thee more dearly, to follow thee more nearly, day by day. And that's really the essence of following God. And what is God? Well, it is the love. I've come to realize that over the years, that it is the love, and we have to keep that love in mind at all times. Kaylee mentioned the law of assumption from Neville, which is true. You know, I am that I am. So you can be interpreted in many ways. And Neville, I believe, my interpretation, I am that, meaning whatever I think about, and he asked you to assume what you want. I am that. As long as you assume that, it will come to be. So you have that choice of assuming whatever, and you're always trying to assume higher and higher things, which was for your benefit and benefit of the world. And then from the science of mind perspective, which I had just come to know more recently over the last few years through Connie, through you, I think Ernest has taught me that he said one thing the other when I gave a talk a while back, but he talked about, you know, how we think about we're going towards the light, right? Well, he said, we're coming from. See, we already are that spirit inside. We have everything, and God is love and, you know, peace. So that's all inside of us. We don't have to go far to look for it. It's right there, you know? And so the next thing that I think he taught me was claim it and claim that love, claim that what you have internally. It's all there is in life. You have that and claim it. And so That I think is the greatest teachings that I had from Science of Mind. Thank you.
Thank you, David Wimber, and really appreciate you being with us. And hi to Lisa.
Hi.
Glad to see you in the background.
It's
a treat to have you with us. Okay, we're still recording. Is there anyone else who would like to share your experience with how you change your thinking about God and change your life with Science Mind? Going, going, gone. I guess you can. Oh, Beverly says she's up for it.
Yes. Let's just say that I kind of was introduced to the idea, the concept of how you thought made a difference in your life. I just didn't know it at the time. And I was raised Baptist and tend to go to church every Sunday and, you know, Bible study. And then when I left to go to college, I went to a Presbyterian college, and that was all it. And then I met this dude and I became a Jehovah's Witness. So, Kaylee, I understand. And I did that for a while. And yes, I was so afraid that, you know, the tribulation was coming, and I did all this stuff, and actually I had almost a breakdown, and eventually I just stopped going to church. And then my son went to a lock-in and came in and said, we got to get a go find the church or whatever. Wound up going to Church of Christ for quite some time. But even then, nothing really. I would rather stay home. And then I keep saying I'm recent, but I had been living the principles for so long, I just didn't know it. And about 2009, I got introduced to The Secret, and it changed my entire concept of life. And what I did was, next thing I knew, I was studying. I just was hungry for information. And then I found Abraham Hicks. From Abraham Hicks, I wound up finding Jose Silva. And then from there, somebody said, go to the Dallas Center for Spiritual Living. What's that? Right. And I went there. And that's kind of how I wound up being introduced to Science of Mind. And I wound up going through foundations and all that training. So mine was like a journey. But if you look back in your life, even before you knew about Science of Mind, you were already starting to live its principles, or you were doing certain things that you look at and you go back in your life and said, how did that happen in my life? And then I started thinking about how I thought, how I acted. And it's like everybody is living this. They just haven't been taught. And I think it's our job to get it out there so people understand that they really, truly have control of their life and setting intention and thinking about what you really want. And yes, I'm a huge Neville Goddard fan, as you all know, and that whole idea of setting your intention and learning. So this whole journey and being here with you, this whole group has helped me expand and learn more. And with the study of the book study and so on, it just helps me to grow even more. And so I appreciate all of you. And when I say I'm here to learn and to absorb, I'm always a sponge because each thing I read or each thing I learn expands that experience of being the great I am. Understanding that I am God, which was a hard thing to start learning to say. So understanding that I am God in this experience, and we are all connected and one collective together. And it just makes a huge difference in your day-to-day work. And stuff just doesn't bother you the way it used to. And so that's my contribution on how I came to it.
Thank you, Beverly. That was great. Anybody else before we close the recording?
Connie, I'll say something.
Felicia?
For me, it's a little different because I had the great blessing of being raised by a spiritual mystic. So all through my childhood, I had the great blessing of having wonderful knowledge and teachings disseminated to me in our life and through cliff notes of the Upanishads and different things like that. So for me, when Connie invited me here, I was loving the practical application of the teachings that are really the universal truth of connecting to God through building the love in your own light, in your own life, and sharing it, and recognizing the God in everything. So it's been a joy to have a like-minded community where it is completely safe to discuss spiritual experiences that are very personal, in moments of enlightenment, and share that with your community and be in a space of people that you know are open and receptive to understanding it, where it will be seen and appreciated for what it is, and just embracing the experiences that we're all having in our life as we're connecting to love and connecting to light and trying to build it in our life and trying to remember that we're all God, us, we, the I, and the everyone. So I'm very thankful to have this community and for all of the very reassuring and I guess I shall say reminders of the things that we want to keep in mind that we sometimes lose track of in our daily hustle and bustle of life. So I am grateful to Connie and the group for these practical, useful teachings.
Thank you, Felicia. That was very helpful.